Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Here's your host, Tom Temin.
The policy package in the House Armed Services Committee's defense bill includes several measures meant to address hazing. Congress and the Government Accountability Office both say DOD has not done enough to track and punish behavior that crosses the line between rites of passage and downright meanness. Congresswoman Judy Chu is the prime sponsor of that legislation. Her nephew, Harry Liu, took his own life after abuse by fellow Marines. She says the military's first step should be to come up with a common definition of hazing.
The DOD has not defined it. That actually is a problem that we are trying to address with my bill and with the amendment that is now in the House version of the NDAA. It is so important to define it and to make clear to service members what does consist of hazing.
And is that a relatively straightforward exercise in terms of coming up with that definition in your mind? Is it a matter of them have just not having bothered to do it, or is that it's actually a difficult problem?
I do believe that the Department of Defense has viewed each of these hazing incidents as isolated. They don't want to necessarily address it as an overall situation. I do think that it is somewhat difficult to define in their terms, and we have left it up to them to define it, but there are some cases that are so very obvious that they definitely need to be addressed.
Aside from coming up with definitions, what else would your bill do?
My bill covers the four elements that were recommended by the GAO report, the Government Accountability Office's report. One is to require the Department of Defense to submit an annual report to Congress to ensure that anti-hazing policies are implemented consistently. Secondly, it would require the DOD to improve existing training to help service members better identify and respond to hazing at all command levels. Then it would mandate that the DOD issue department-wide guidance on collecting the data, and in fact, we have included a Department of Defense recommendation that there be a database that is similar to the sexual assault database, which crosses all the different branches of the military and makes clear what should be reported and how it should be reported, and includes protected classes such as race and religion. And finally, it requires the DOD to evaluate the prevalence of hazing through department-wide surveys. And that is so that we know overall what is the problem, what progress is being made.
Right. And that was one thing I was wondering. Even absent that data, do you have a sense of any kind as to how prevalent these, as you said, egregious cases are throughout the armed services?
I do not know. But what I do know from the reports that were given to us due to my request from earlier legislation, that the reporting is very, very inconsistent. It's hard to make heads or tails of it because the criteria is so different from branch to branch. But what I also know is that hazing is destructive to the military. It has a negative impact on military retention. It doesn't create a bond within a unit. That even one case should be a serious concern for our military.
Sure. And you brought up sexual assault, and it seems to me that in some ways this hazing does share some characteristics with sexual assault in that tracking it and preventing it kind of depends on victims being willing to come forward and fellow service members not being willing to be bystanders. Is the military, as far as you can tell, communicating those messages on hazing in the way that it's at least started to do with sexual assault?
No, I don't believe it is. They have policies that say that hazing should not be tolerated, but from branch to branch, there are great differences with regard to whether people are required to report it or whether they even define hazing very clearly. So there is a great deal of uncertainty unless we work on these issues that are contained within my bill.
Once we do have better data and a centralized military-wide database, is the objective with that, is the idea that it would allow the military services themselves to better police their own ranks and punish hazing where it does occur, or more as sort of a future guide for policymakers like you to do more legislation in this area?
Well, this addresses both. I think that there needs to be congressional oversight of this issue. That's why I have requested the annual reports. We would be eager to see what kind of progress is being taken place from year to year. But I also think that it's so important for the Department of Defense to be able to evaluate its own progress. They need to see that there is a serious issue here, and they need to see it through concrete data. Certainly, if we can't make heads or tails of the current reports, they certainly can't, which means that this issue is really not being addressed in a very serious way. It is my hope that with this bill and with this database, that supervisors would then take hazing seriously, that they would actually stop it before it occurs, and that nobody has to really experience any kind of hazing or the serious consequences that occurs. But if it does occur, then I hope that with this database that those who are the victims will feel like they can come forward and report it, and that something would be done about it.
I want to go back to where we started, which is the matter of definitions. And I know you said that it's difficult for the military to define in their terms, but in everyday layman's terms, how would you describe the difference between something that is genuinely or ought to be a punishable offense and, as we talked about earlier, just spree to core things? Because I think there's probably people in the military who would strongly disagree about where that line is.
Well, of course, there was my my nephew who was punched and kicked for 3.5 hours and made to dig a foxhole with all kinds of equipment on his back. The contents of a sandbag were released so as to smother him. And 20 minutes after this torture of 3.5 hours, he climbed into the foxhole that he was made to dig and shot himself to death. And then there's Denny Chen. That was a case that occurred only a few months later. Denny Chen was tortured for 6 weeks by his superiors, who dragged him across his back, across gravel, so that it bled. They threw rocks at him as though he were an artillery target. They forced him to wear a construction hat and talk in Chinese, even though none of the other soldiers spoke the language, but it was to definitely ridicule him. He was called Gook, Chink, and Dragon Lady. And finally, after the 6 weeks, he killed himself. So I would say that there are clear situations where there is hazing. And if this kind of treatment is just being written off as corrective punishment, then I think there's something severely wrong with our military.
Right. And very sorry for your family's loss on the incident that directly impacted your family. But in cases that are as egregious as the ones that you just cited, where I think everyone would agree that those are completely unacceptable and illegal, is the military treating at least those as seriously as they should be?
No, definitely not. I actually went to the jury trials of my nephew's tortures, and of the three, two were let go without any punishment, and one had 1 month of confinement. The military needs to be able to deal with this hazing, and hazing has no place within our military. Our military does so much for us. Our soldiers work so hard for us, and we owe it to them to make sure that they are protected.
That's Congresswoman Judy Chu talking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin.
Pentagon Solutions will return after these messages.
Listening to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
Navy brass have decided to recompete the gigantic Next Generation Enterprise Network contractor, NGEN. But this time around, they're considering some tweaks in the way they award that contract, and that includes expanding the roster of companies getting contracts to a flotilla. Federal News Radio, Scott Massioni has more.
The Navy uses a massive contracting vehicle called Next Generation Enterprise Network, or NGEN, to handle a huge amount of its IT needs. Last time the contract was awarded, it came out to be about $3.5 billion. That contract bought services for the government-owned Navy Marine Corps Intranet, the Marine Corps Enterprise Network, and OneNet. But now the Navy wants to tinker with the way it awards the next-gen contract in June 2018. The current contract is awarded to just one company, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise Services. But this time around, the Navy's thinking about a multi-source contract. That way, different services within the contract can be segmented out. Different companies can run different parts of a whole IT system. Here's Captain Michael Abreu, the program manager for Naval Enterprise Network Program Office, during an industry day in Vienna, Virginia.
I see this as another evolutionary step where, as a large-scale enterprise services program office, we're trying to do quite a few things and consolidate our business practices on NIPR and CIPRNet to provide best value to the Navy. So in terms of course correction, the ability for the government and the Navy to achieve that best value in a different way, I think, is worth exploring. So when we talk about multiple contracts and segmentation, I think that is the largest change that we're contemplating from the current business model today, right? So we have a single enterprise service provider. In the future, we're contemplating multiple contracts for pieces of that service provider. The number is still TBD, but I think that would be the biggest course correction.
Here's what the Navy's thinking about doing. Right now, the Navy owns the network, but all the services on it are handled by a single contractor. Things like productivity services and device management. The Navy wants to break those services out into different segments. It's currently thinking about six different segmentations. Things like end-user hardware, file sharing, transport, service integration, and service management. Instead of having one company do all of that, it's possible that one company may do each of those things. Here's Abreu again.
What we're trying to do now is look at what this business model is doing for us today and how it could potentially change in the future. So because we own the infrastructure that allows us to be able to do those sorts of things, be able to contemplate segmentation, to be able to have a dialogue with industry about the best way to do business, as well as have some flexibility in terms of what pieces we might want to bundle together and manage together, or what pieces we might want to segment out effectively. For the recompete, to get to the last part of your question, we're looking at segmenting out the end user hardware as a service and managing it that separately. So right now it's bundled, it's in the basic thing that we buy with our current service provider, but we're looking to break that out and treat that separately, and that helps us in a couple of ways. It helps us drive some more affordability into that piece of the business, and it also helps us maintain our ability to keep that separate in the budget environment from the rest of the pieces of what we consume. So from a budgetary standpoint, it helps us control and level out the budget over time, and it's very, very helpful to us to be able to do that.
Abreu says the Navy will decide the total number of segments in the fall. If it does go with a multi-source contract, the Navy may also consider a bridge contract. The Navy would award the contract before the summer of 2018, but would keep HP Enterprise Services on to overlap for a period. By doing that, HP Enterprise Services can stay on to help train the new companies as they take over the contract. What the Navy's really trying to stress in this NGEN contract is flexibility. That's especially important to the military service considering how fast IT landscapes are changing. By going to different companies for different services, the Navy can get a company that specializes in clouds to do cloud services, and one that specializes in file sharing for its file sharing needs. The ultimate goal, according to multiple sources in the Navy, is to provide a better, more seamless experience for the warfighter. Here's Phil Anderson, the Deputy Program Manager for Naval Enterprise Networks.
Things are changing in terms of what customers and stakeholders want. And this is just four of a few. Provisioning, service provisioning, and delivery to speed to outcome. So what we've heard loud and clear is the process that we have currently for delivering services doesn't match the customer's need for speed. So they have a requirement that they have. They want a new item on the network, or they want a new service. they really need it done very quickly. CONUS and OCONUS alignment, right? Bring your OCONUS networks into the CONUS fold, one that we've heard over and over and over again because it impacts how you deliver services. There's a thought that different users of the network require different levels of service. So when you look at availability, reliability, and security, there's a threshold that you have that must be true for everybody. But then there's others that different working hours, different expectations of that individual, different levels of importance in terms of national defense, their levels of service are going to be a little bit different than the ones for the standard.
Other things driving the change in engine are industry trends and the advancement of technology. The Navy says it wants to stay up to date with the best IT and the best IT services. Of course, there are some challenges that may pop up as well. With all these different companies working on one system, there are bound to be some problems between companies. Anderson says the Navy doesn't want to have to deal with any of those issues between companies when it comes to the segments of engine. Here's Anderson again.
If you go to a multi-sourcing model, one of the great fears is you're going to create a lot of seams that you don't know how to close, you don't know how to integrate well, right? So part of that has been, clearly industry does that today, right? You have partnerships already because you guys showed it to us, right? Where you've got different vendors providing different tools. Some of those tools are vendor agnostic. And so there's an integration function that you already know how to do when you have different vendors providing services, but you don't want the customer to see what's going on behind the scenes. And this is really important. If you support a multi-sourcing model, right, because we're going to send this stuff out for more comment, you have to make sure that we have the confidence that the government is not sitting at the table between two vendors watching people squabble over service level performance issues and things like that.
In Washington, Scott Massioni, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click share with friends. I'm Tom Temin.
You've been listening to Pentagon Solutions. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Pentagon Solutions.